are here with Lisa Kudrow. Hi.
Wow. Hi.
We're just talking about the It Gets Better storyline because right. I did one for your company.
Right. Thank you.
Because you're partners with Dan Bukatinski. Did I say it right?
Absolutely
yeah.
right.
And I did that thing. And we were just talking about how kids really they look for their tribe in so many different places today. Where,
right.
You know, you find your tribe where you can. You right. know, congratulations for doing that. That's so awesome.
Oh, thanks.
What propelled
yeah.
you to do something like that?
Well, we were talking. Wait, first, I have to give the credit to Dan Bukatinski and Kyle McNally, who produced that show. And I'm just lucky enough that I get to take credit for it. But we were meeting with Dan Savage and his producing partner, Brian Pines. And it just came up like, you know, It Gets Better is so fantastic. And then there was some discussion about, yeah, but people are wondering, well, how did it get better?
Right.
Why did it get better? I mean, just hang in there for how.
Right, yeah. right, right.
The how. And so we set out to do this, just a short form, you know, just a short form web series for L Studio, who we've worked with before, and they're fantastic. And then we were lucky enough to get people like you who were willing to talk about what it was like
yeah.
growing up, what was hard, what got them through,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it can be tricky because for some people, you know, it really is just within them to, well, I just like myself. So nothing's going to really, things will be hard, but I can't take it that personally because they're just wrong. I like
mm-hmm.
myself,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not lucky enough to be born that way, then people are offering sort of, not strategies, but they're strategies. I just
yeah.
found people that I could relate to, and those were my people. Right. I found my people. And
yeah,
so
your
I
tribe.
Had, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said.
And how many have there been? How many did you guys, have you taped?
This is, well, let's see. If we do 6 or 8 a season, this is the 3rd season, so I think it's 18.
Wow, that's math.
It's a lot. Well, yeah. It was multiplication.
Uh-huh.
And it may not have been accurate.
Well, it's a whole funny thing, though, because, you know, everybody who's a survivor of life, and life
right.
is not easy,
right.
Has a story or a method that they've somehow acquired, you know, these sort of battle gear. And I guess it gets better, but what happens is you get better.
Right. Yeah, you mature.
Yep.
You start to know who you are, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
right? And then be comfortable with yourself. You find your comfort zone, or what do you think? I don't know.
I guess so. I mean, you know, there are times, we were just talking about this earlier today, there are times when I don't feel comfortable, but I'm smart enough to go, Rue, you're a human. What's going on? Have you eaten anything?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What was there a thought you had 2 blocks away that made this thought come up, you know?
Right.
And so I know my character enough to know, first, go lay down. Why don't you have a drink of water? Or why don't you hit that
right.
Google Earth button and get a wider perspective of the situation?
But those
oh,
are your tools.
Good, yeah.
And a lot of people don't have the tools.
Right.
And I think that's the key, especially to helping young kids and going through that. Like, my daughter had dealt with depression for 2 years. For
that's
her,
a tough one.
It's really tough, especially when it's that, like,
severe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. But
yeah.
You don't know what else to do. And Rue can give her tools. I can give her tools. But if she doesn't know how to implement them and she doesn't know how to separate,
right.
those words mean nothing.
Right.
It's just
yeah.
banter.
Yeah.
Until they can actually sit down and go, okay, this is like, you found Google Earth works for you. Doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work for her. What does? So I think that's part of the journey that is going to help these people with having different voices speak on.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did help them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, and this is just a theory, so I would love to, you know, be told I'm an idiot and how dare you say that. But what I'm noticing, there's a trend amongst the people who, and that's, it's only 18, but
mm-hmm.
it's a trend. That I've noticed, but also in life, that there are people who, yeah, life is hard. And, you know, depending on who you are and your circumstances, it can be harder. But there are people who just don't want to stay too long in a state of victimhood.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which I think today is a little tricky because we thrive on stories of victimhood now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you sense that too? Yes.
I do. Because there's a certain sense of narcissism that everyone is growing. I think the me generation sort of born this next generation of my feelings. What's happening? What are you doing to me? You know,
right. I'm uncomfortable. Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And then the helicopter parents also said, "Are you okay? What are you feeling? Do you need a sweater? Do you need that?" So you know, you never have a chance to find it on your own, and then it does become all about you. So I think there is, I agree completely with what you're saying. Now, when you grew up here in California, you're from Encino.
Yeah, Tarzana.
Did you grow up with the Jacksons? Did you know the Jacksons, Latoya? Or
No, they're a little older. So, but I think my brother and sister went to junior high
with Jacksons.
With some of the Jacksons,
right? Because that's the area.
Because they were Encino, right?
Yeah. They were in Encino. Tarzana had the same junior high.
Yeah. How were you? Were you an awkward kid?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, in junior high school, yes. But before that, I was the most confident and felt like I had tons of friends. And who on earth would not want to be friends with me?
Duh.
You know?
Yeah.
I was fantastic and lucky. You know, I just felt so lucky.
In middle school?
And then in middle school, it was, you know, no one would introduce me to their friends they knew from Hebrew school.
Right.
Or, you know, that they met elsewhere. And so I would just, I didn't know how to, hi, I'm Lisa. You know, you're 12. You're not throwing out your hand. Right. I don't, and then that was kind of a nightmare, which got me to a play production class.
Right.
I really had no friends at all. And people were really cruel and mean. And I think just everyone is struggling at such an awful age. And that's why everyone is so mean. Everyone is suffering.
Well, but you mentioned earlier, you talked about staying in that victimhood. But somehow you were in this place that led you to a place where you could find your light, your spotlight.
Right.
And so that's how it got better for you, is that the sort of darkness or the difficulty of being social with the new friends led you to a play, to acting class.
The theater.
Well, I mean, I think I have to go a little more internal than that. I mean, that's like the actual practical way, you know, that I was able to make new friends.
Mm-hmm.
But internally, while all this was going on and I had no friends and no one would talk to me, I thought, oh my God, the world is upside down. It's like Macbeth, fair is foul is fair, which by the way was another thing, reason why people didn't like me, because I would make references like, oh, it's like Macbeth. But, but I really thought, oh, it's upside down. Ugly is pretty, mean is popular, which doesn't make any sense at all, because popular should mean there's
loving.
A huge number of love. A lot of love. And I just thought, oh, this is, the world doesn't make sense. It's this is the world. It's upside down.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not. So
that's
figure it out.
For a kid to think that way.
I don't think so.
You don't?
No.
I feel like it is most children. Now, my daughter, Will, she's having the same issues. And you don't understand the joy I'm getting right now, because she's going to be a junior. Friend issues have always been there. The depression, nobody understood, blah, blah, blah. She just joined theater, and she's just, and I've been trying to push her. I think it's going to change her life, Lisa.
It's a big deal. It's a huge difference. Not just for me, even though, I made friends because I could do something and it was appreciated. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had some value there. But, you know, I've since visited that junior high school, which is now a Title I school. Because so many people in the areas of that district that can afford to send their kids to private school do, which only leaves the kids who are from families that are at or below the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
So there are years that that school is a Title I school, which means there's no funding for arts education.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes they don't get to have their theater program, which the principal of the school said, this is key. When we get any funding, the first thing we put back is the theater program for after school, because you can engage so many kids with it. They don't all have to be acting. And it gives them a community, and it gives them a place to go. Because where are they going? Their parents are both working, and oh my goodness. I didn't realize it's huge, probably especially for those tween ages.
Oh my goodness. I went to a performing arts school, and that is where I found my tribe. Mm-hmm. I thought up was down and down was up, and I thought, is anybody else seeing this?
Right, right.
You know, and I remember the first time I saw Woody Allen's Annie Hall, and he stops people on the street and goes, are you getting this? And they're like, yeah, I am getting it. I'm like, oh my God, someone else thinks that way. Someone else thinks it. But in the theater departments where I found the other kids who were challenging up and down and sideways and all that stuff.
And I know for other kids it was, you know, the chess club.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, these other things that where they found their own people. So they had friends. I'm not nuts.
Yeah.
But
mm-mm.
I never thought it was me. I always thought, okay, that's the world, mm-hmm. and that means it's hard, so you've got to figure it out.
Also, you know, that Twilight Zone episode, you're probably too young for this one, but where the girl from another planet gets the surgery to look like the people, and she realized, you know, that
the
one?
People. The pig people.
Yeah. Is that what it was?
The pig face.
Yes.
It's like, now she's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she went in looking like Marilyn Monroe.
Right, Or like Marilyn Munster.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yes,
she was
exactly.
Gorgeous.
Right,
Marilyn
Munster.
And then they put a snout, a pig snout on her and went, oh, finally.
She's gorgeous.
That was great. Those were so clever.
No, but that's...
Yes,
you know,
right.
When you are a seeker, you look for it. So when you talk about...
Right, what's going to... Yes, what's going to affirm me instead of what's wrong with me? Because that's not what I was asking so much.
Right.
Maybe for a moment, because a human being does wonder.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you look around, you're like, oh, something's not right. Is it me?
Right.
And then, no, I don't think it is. So then you just look for other things that affirm who you are.
I love that.
You know, it's funny you say that because I wanted to ask you about acting and your process because, you know, when I approach acting, it's very difficult for me to let go of the me that I've cultivated over these years.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm not saying
no.
I mean, I feel the same way.
Well,
right.
The thing is, when I
for
see
myself.
You act, I can...
We got you, Lisa. We got it, dude. You don't even need to explain because there was no feeling
no shade.
Of you going.
There was no shade.
Let go of you. We can't take it.
No, but, you know, because I was that kid, you know, I did tell you a horrible story.
I love horrible stories.
I know you do. My weekends with the kids, my father was supposed to come pick me up on the weekends, and I'm sitting on the front porch, never shows up. So I thought, well, what's wrong with me? I'll fix what's wrong. I looked at society. I couldn't fit into all the other kids. I thought, well, okay.
Wait, what do you mean your father never?
Well,
where were you?
I was on, you know, weekends with the kids, divorce. He was supposed to come pick me up to take me someplace and spend time together.
Okay.
Wouldn't show up.
Oh.
So I'm sitting on the porch. Continuously. Over and over and over again. So I thought, I'll sing, I'll dance, what do you want? I can do it, you know? And that worked well for me because I've been able to create a career out of it. The thing is, with acting, to be able to revert to what you're actually feeling rather than what the atmosphere is calling for you to do, I find that transition very difficult. And I've seen the characters you create have layer upon layer, texture so much that it's amazing to me. How do you do that?
Well, by the way, that's when it's easy to act. When you do have somewhere to go, that's clear to you.
You write things down?
Write things down. I don't. I think a lot. I can't help it. I just keep thinking, and I keep thinking about just different scenarios for the person and how would they react and, you know, what's their backstory. I don't write it down.
Mm-hmm.
I just think about it and then incorporate it, and it becomes a truth. So that then, you know, with Valerie Cherish, for example, when we're writing, you know, when Michael and I are writing, you know, Valerie, and so he'll propose some kind of situation. And sometimes I feel like, how can you even suggest that when, you know, in 1978, and I have to check myself, like, well, he doesn't know that was in your head.
Right.
So
right.
I'll say, well, I don't know what you think of this, but I had thought, like, way back, she probably did this and this. He's like, oh, well, that makes sense. That's great. Okay. You know, so I don't know. I have, like, this whole person with a history in my head.
But the fact
when I don't, it's hard. When I don't, it's really hard.
But the fact that you're able to remember it, it's one thing to have it in your head, but then to actually physicalize it to where the audience, I'm looking and I can go, oh, 1978. That's she's talking about that time with it. Yeah. I can see it. See, that's two different things. Being able to think about it and have it in your head. I'm interested in how you're able to make it go from a thought to a communication that we, the audience, can actually know. I see 1978. She had that thing happen to her. How do you do that? Do you have any idea?
And I will say nobody does it better than you. Nobody does.
It's Geraldine Page and Sandy Dennis. They all do the same kind of quirk things where you go, were we supposed to see that?
Right, where they got caught.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, getting caught is my favorite kind of comedy. It just, you know, right? It depends on what extreme, you know, you're going to show getting caught. So maybe that's what it is, where I do like playing people who just get caught and they didn't realize they were showing a thought.
I have so many questions. We're going to take a quick break, but I'm. Is it on the page, or how much of it is on the page?
Come back. Yeah. We got to get into this because the obsession with Valerie Cherish is so deep.
Yeah,
I want to know that whole process. Well, that whole thing.
We will. Let's take a real quick break, and we'll come back. We're talking with Lisa Kudrow. We're talking about everything. We're going to talk about everything.
Ursula Anna.
Casper mattresses are the most comfortable mattresses in the world.
And that ain't no lie, baby.
That ain't no lie. Now, Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Now, you can get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/RU. And using that offer code, honey, will save you some money. What are you waiting for?
You need a mattress. You need to get it today. Go to casper.com/RU. Get started. I am telling you right now, it is going to be the best decision you have made in a long time. Can't sleep? This is the way to go. Casper.com/RU.
Hey, Michelle, so let's talk about Squarespace.
You know we love our Squarespace.
Yeah, I know a lot of people love our little commercials for Squarespace.
They do!
I just wish all of those people would go to Squarespace and really see how easy it is to create a website.
It's like a choo-choo train, honey. You know, it's slow and then it starts chugging along. They're going.
They are going. Because I know that one of our winners, I don't know if you want to name her name, just loves our little commercials for Squarespace.
It's Sharon Needles. She loves all of our ads, and she could do them verbatim. And I have to tell you, they have all gone to Squarespace and checked it out and have gotten some of them have purchased the things.
Well, let me tell you why. Because Squarespace is so easy to use. You can make a gorgeous website in minutes using their beautiful templates and simple drag and drop platform.
Hey, drag and drop.
Hey, girl. When you're ready to purchase a plan, get 10% off with the offer code RU. RU. That's squarespace.com. RU. We've got Lisa Kudrow here. We're talking about acting. I mean, honestly, and not just because you're here, I've felt this about you for many years with, you know, Geraldine Page, Sandy Dennis, that the thing you do, you're saying it's getting caught. That's an acting term where you get caught. Explain that to me.
Oh, well, that was, I think what you're describing with them, they seem sort of taken unawares or caught off guard or thrown off balance by like a fraction of a moment, right?
Yeah.
And then recover, because I think we all have those thoughts, but some of us just cover really well.
How do you physicalize that in acting on camera and
without
action?
It being, I don't know, obvious.
I don't know. I mean, it might have to do with the recovery. So that you saw it, but then the recovery is so complete that, did I see it? I think it was there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there enough so that it's comedic. Like, oh, I saw it. Oh, and then a recovery is if we didn't see it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, poor thing. Thinks that she pulled it off. Oh, okay.
Which leads into the next phase of Lisa, which is awkward. And nobody could do or handle that awkward moment better than Lisa Kudrow. Nobody,
right.
Not anybody, not ever.
Thank you.
But
right.
It's true. No, it's a gift.
That's thrilling.
It
to
is.
To be able to be that vulnerably awkward, and Valerie Cherish is the epitome.
Oh my God.
Of awkward.
Right. Well, it's the way it's shot, too.
No, it's
there's a
you.
Lot of help. No, I'm not. I honestly, because if you were to shoot it regularly and, you know, the camera's not moving at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. It's
Do you
different.
Think?
Yes, because the camera's moving, so it's sloppy, and it feels like it's all being sort of
I think
observed.
Those are icings or sprinkles or cherries. Like, it's not. Cupcake is a great reference. No, but it's, do you know what I'm saying?
No, but when after Give Her Another Break, the guy, the executive, he takes her backstage and the camera is sort of lurking where it's behind. And and he says, if you ever do that again. And we fall in love with Valerie. We know how vulnerable she is. And for to look on her eyes to know what he means by that, it is the most unnerving thing I've ever seen on television, because we've all been there in some form or fashion, you know. Why does it dissect that scene? Why does that work the way it does? Why does that scene work so well for us?
Well, I mean, I think the things that work, they work because they ring very true. You know, the look on her face of sort of, you know, it's a mixture of every thought that one would have, that I was having, because I imagined Valerie was having, which was, he's mad and I can't have that because I'm a pleaser. And he probably misunderstands something. I'll try to fix it. So then you see her start to try to talk, and then he cuts her off and says, you know, you're not it anymore. You know, that part of it, right? Where he says...
That's the line.
Yeah.
Oh.
But then you see it in her face, too.
But she's not hearing. Instantly. She knows what he's saying. She's choosing not to believe that he's saying, you are not it. He's saying, this isn't that show, she's deciding.
But you still see it in your eyes. You still see it.
There's an inkling of it.
Yes. It's like, that's what, at first, that can't be. Right. Mm-hmm. Because you hear it and you're... And, the ouch.
Yeah.
Nope, that can't be what he's saying, because how do you continue?
Yeah.
If that's what he means, then how do you continue?
Ooh, right? Yes, yes.
Right? So it's all by necessity, and it's, to me, coping. You know, she can't, given where she is, she can't really say, all right, now hold on a second. That was uncalled for. You know, she's not going to say that.
Yeah.
Time out. She does her silent, like, but her silent.
Her silent timeout.
Timeout. Yeah. She won't even say it out loud. You know, because she's a pleaser and a woman of the, you know, her parents were 50s people. Yeah. I don't know. It's all gets informed to me.
And this is, none of this, her background is written down. Her background is something that you've thought about, and you can remember it every time you get into this character.
Yeah.
Because you created Valerie.
Yeah. I mean, I had a... Yes. I mean, I mostly created it with Michael Patrick King. I did a character monologue in The Groundlings, which was just a phony actress. And it was called Your Actress, Your Favorite Actress on a Talk Show.
A written monologue?
Yeah, a written monologue that I wrote.
You wrote it?
Yeah, I wrote it. And I loved that monologue. I loved it. I loved that character. She was just awful and horrible. She was on, it was still Johnny Carson, and she hadn't been on in a while. It was clear, you know, because I love those Bob Newhart phone calls where you just, you know exactly what's going on from this one side of the conversation. And to me, that was the art of, you know, doing a monologue or downright or in one. I don't know what everyone calls them, but at The Groundlings, you know, it was a monologue. And so she was just really phony and trying to talk about, you know, her favorite cause. Please, 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 everybody, we have to save the planet as a favor to me. You know, and then, like, because I'm a celebrity, so as a favor to me, I'll love you for it. I really will. And that sort of phony voice that came from where?
You're
from, it says Van Nuys in your bio, but, you know.
Wow, it's just it's just so smart. It's so smart, and you can see that in the characters that you're doing. You know, that opposite, is it opposite of sex?
Opposite of sex, Don Roos.
Opposite of sex, so great.
Thanks. Wait,
do you watch those movies? Do you ever get to see those movies again?
No,
you don't watch them.
No,
and I know you mentioned The Groundlings. You went from Tarzana. Got in The Groundlings,
right?
Started acting there, and then from there you started doing TV stuff.
Yeah, basically.
And when did you know you were really good?
I don't know.
Well,
I mean, no, honestly.
Well, you got into The Groundlings. First of all, getting in there is a chore.
Yeah, that was an endorsement for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, even before that, there was you know, I was friends with Conan O'Brien. Mm-hmm. I met him in my very first improv class because the Groundlings wouldn't let me sign up for classes because I, you know, they said, so when's the last time you were on stage or acted? I said, oh, junior high. I guess I was like 13. And they went, okay, go see Cynthia Seghetti, who was, you know, a groundling, and she was doing outside classes. Uh-huh. And that was like divine intervention. Thank God. Yeah. I got sent to Cynthia Seghetti. She's fantastic, okay? Uh-huh. And so I went to the first class and thought, oh, I don't know if this is for me, because I took myself kind of seriously, you know? Mm-hmm. I was like a biology major and science, and I really hadn't done anything since junior high.
But you wanted to. Something was calling you.
Something was definitely calling me. Mm. And I went to the class, and there were a lot of people who were just sort of playing at, you know, space ball, throwing a baseball or lifting a disc, and mm-hmm, then being thrown emotional adjustments or being shouted at them, and they're just sort of exaggerating them. Mm-hmm. They're you know, indicating emotional adjustments. And I thought, I don't want it. This is embarrassing. Like, mm-hmm, I'm embarrassed for everybody, and I'm embarrassed for myself if that's what I look like. Mm-hmm. So the next class, I was late, which to me shows sort of it was like a lack of commitment,
right?
Mm-hmm. I thought, you know. So I got there late. Everyone was up on stage. There was a new guy there, really tall, thin, redheaded guy. And I didn't want to go up. I said, I don't want to interfere. So I'll stay and watch everybody.
Well, you won't make dicks out of yourself.
Yeah, let's see how this goes, because I don't, this might be my last class. And there is Conan lifting a disc, and it's not embarrassing. He looks like he's lifting a disc, and he's not pretending that it's really heavy, you know. He's not yucking it up. And emotional adjustments, he's just taking them on, fully committed. And it's not over the top, and it's not embarrassing. He's just truly, and I went, oh, commitment. That's what she means. Like, if the penny dropped, that's what commitment. She keeps saying commit, commit. That's what she means. It's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not embarrassed for him. I can do that. Oh, I can do that. Uh-huh. And uh-huh. That's why I stayed in the class.
Right. And you kept on, and there it goes.
Yeah, thanks to Conan O'Brien, because he showed me the way.
Are you guys still friends?
Yeah.
But isn't there a certain amount of embarrassment that you have to sort of take on to be able to release what you think other people are thinking about you in this?
Yeah, I mean, I think embarrassment, it's, you can't allow it for very long. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, you have to say, all right, so now what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. What am I going to hate myself because it was embarrassing for a little bit? Yeah, it's because, so temporary.
Because, yeah. I mean, go back to Valerie Cherish, because there's so much of that. There's so much. I'm surprised that that even got on the air, because, first of all, people don't really like stories about Hollywood behind the scenes, because it breaks the fantasy of it.
Right.
And the fact that it's become such a cult classic, not just a cult classic, but a bona fide classic TV, is amazing to me. Because if you're in the business and you've ever been rejected and you've ever been not on the hot list, it rings so true.
Especially
too true.
Writers like Pauly D and those people exist.
Right. Oh my God! Yeah,
so much more than people. It was. I can't even tell you the brilliance. Do you know how brilliant the comeback is?
I think it's good. Yeah, I do think it's really good. It's,
yeah,
I think it was something that just happened with Michael Patrick King and I. That there's no explanation for it. Mm. We got in sync. It took us 3 weeks to write the pilot. Like a short time,
right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then just started working on, you know, the episodes once we got the okay for that. And it happened really fast. And doing this second season happened really fast. It was like December or February, and HBO said, all right, so you'll do more.
Yeah.
And then we went, okay. And then we were shooting in May.
Yeah.
It's fast.
Yeah.
It's really fast.
Are you doing more? Will there be?
We're talking. You know, I mean, the thing is, boy, did that end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Mm. Yeah.
And yeah, we just want to make sure it's worthwhile. Like, whatever we're doing, that it's worthwhile.
Well, for the fans, it is.
Yeah.
Because we can't get enough. Yeah. Like I can watch it over and over, and Mickey, and just the characters that were created.
Yeah, Mickey, oh my God.
They're just so brilliant. These actors and you.
Aren't they? Laura Silverman, yeah. Jane,
brilliant,
oh my God. Yeah,
brilliant, and it's.
But is there seems to be though? Yes, sorry. could you do it again? But the thing is, there seems to be an overall message. Like there, you're actually saying something, and you're saying something about the business, and you're saying something about humans in the business and how that affects people and fame and narcissism. It's there's so much. Am I on the right track? Was there? Did you start with an idea of a statement and then write the script?
I don't think there was just one statement. The thing that it started with was reality shows. This is a minefield. I don't think people realize what a minefield this is. Ugh. And so it started with that idea and that, you know, you wouldn't feel sorry. It's almost impossible to do a thing about reality shows in 2005 because you'd feel too horrible for the subject. But if it's an actress who's signing up for it, then maybe that's okay.
Ah,
right?
Yeah.
So that was the way in to addressing reality TV. And then we didn't want to stop there because by necessity, if you're going to talk about reality TV, you have to talk about network TV, which we knew in 2005 from writer friends. They weren't making scripted shows as much because it was cheaper to do the reality shows. And so those people weren't writing shows. So that means, you know, then down the line, there's just going to be an explosion of reality shows, which hadn't happened when this aired, but we knew it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then it looked like, oh, my God, they could see into the future. And thought, well, no, I mean, we saw it wasn't the future. It was the present. You just it didn't reach you yet, you know.
Yeah.
But and so and then you just one thing leads to another. And if you're going to talk about that, then you have to talk about what's her marriage like? What's her family life like? If she's, you know, concentrating on, oh my, and then what's she like that she's so desperate for the spotlight, like all publicity is good publicity, that she agrees to be on a reality show called The Comeback. It's all humiliating.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. And it turns out, like, then you watch The Housewives, right? It didn't matter for them either because it's all humiliating, but you still get to open another restaurant.
That's
you
right.
still might have a career after you know your marriage is on the rocks already. So when he does leave you, you might have a career and a way to support yourself.
If not, there's money for a little bit.
And if not, there's money for a little bit. And so, I don't know, it's just that desperation and the desperation of networks that we in 2005 decided the net. You know, whatever network that was, it was called The Net, was going to hedge their bets. They were going to do a sitcom and a reality show companion piece so that just in case one doesn't work, they had the other.
Yeah.
You know.
How much of it was scripted?
All of it.
See, that's how
100%
the brilliance.
Yeah.
That's the camera work, though. You know, you were there.
But Lisa.
Yeah.
It's scripted.
Part of it
and
is
there's
the camera.
20,000 takes sometimes.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's the camera work that makes it look like it's all just being sort of.
It's also your delivery,
accidentally
though.
Tripped over.
Yeah.
Have there been actresses, and I've got a few guesses, but have there been actresses, we won't say their names, who have come forward and said, you're telling my story?
A lot
you?
Of people thought that I was talking about them. Great actresses who, no, I wasn't. Mm. I didn't even have one actress in mind. It was. I mean, I've had met a lot of actors, by the way. It's not just actresses.
Sure,
I've met a lot of actors and actresses who, I mean, she wouldn't be, she would have been sort of an impossibility otherwise, you know? You wouldn't have been, you were able to recognize what that is. And you're also able to recognize it in ourselves, you know, whatever line of work you're in. Everyone has those thoughts.
Right.
Am I still relevant?
Mm-hmm.
Was that a dig?
Right.
Can I afford to address it or will I lose my job if I do? I better
not. Right. Oh, my God. Now, it's interesting because, you know, that sort of what you're describing, that awareness. So few people have that. So like in actors, you know, where, you know, you would think that all actors would get it and go, oh, I get it. You're doing this parody and it's a whole bunch of people. But for someone to come over and say, you're doing me. You are doing me. That self-awareness, a lot of people don't have that.
Right.
Do you find a lot in show business?
Yeah. But I mean, I'm still stuck on, you know, the person in real estate who said that you were, I felt like you were doing me.
Mm-hmm.
That was my story. But no, when actresses feel, yeah, like it's potentially, I'm potentially making fun of them personally.
Mm-hmm.
That felt awful because, of course, I'm not. So the first opportunity
that's their
I can
issue,
to
not
clear
yours.
That up.
Yeah.
No, but to clear it up, no one should think that. That's not true.
I didn't feel like she was based on anybody. She seemed so personal mm-hmm. and so you that even though you may somehow offshoot be telling somebody else's story, it's got nothing to do with you. Valerie was pure Valerie to me.
Yeah.
But you know,
but
I understand that.
But there are aspects of myself in it too.
Of course.
By the way, because right. I'm an actress and. And I'm a human being, so everybody's going, well, is that a dig? Well, it's all right if it was.
Well, it's an interesting thing because what the characters is really, it's like Blanche DuBois, who is on the verge of really a break. And she's very fragile, but she's got these defense mechanisms that keep her going. And the choice to make, do I address it or I just ignore it, you know? That's what makes it so, so smart. I mean, we can talk about this forever because it's so important. It's such an important piece because, like you said, it's not just this business, but it's every business. It's self-awareness.
Yeah, right. I mean, and also, I would just like to point out, she didn't complain.
Right.
Mm. No.
She really didn't complain much. You know, and something else that's interesting to me is sometimes I'm really surprised when, like, some people will say, especially the second season, like, you know, she is like a hero. She's like a what a great feminist statement. I'm like, I don't think you want to. No, let's not point to Valerie Cherish as a champion of, you know, feminism. I don't know that that's accurate. You know, I mean, I don't even know if it's right to say she's a strong woman, but she is.
She's a survivor.
She knows who she is, and she knows what she wants.
Right.
She doesn't complain. She just keeps going.
Do you know who the Twitter handle Val cherishes? Do you know who that person is?
Who's running it?
Not personally. No, I know of it. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
It's two people, I think.
Oh,
they
really?
Answer, you are. They're Valerie Cherish.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, everything's so good. Okay, baby girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes us so happy. Like,
I know,
so
we
happy.
Thought at, when we were, you know, doing that second season, like, oh, we should engage them somehow. And then it turns out we would have, like, undermined what they were doing. Like, we didn't want to do anything to interfere with what they were doing. They should be able to still do it. So,
yeah. You kind of stay out of the limelight, you know.
Very dull.
Well, I mean, is it you being dull or is it a choice to say, I'm not going to do the Hollywood thing?
I don't know what the Hollywood thing is. If that, I mean, going out, no, I don't.
Right.
No clubs.
You don't go out and you don't parade your baby on the cover of People magazine or you.
No, but I mean, look, when I had my baby 18 years ago, there was a picture or two. Mm-hmm. But I'm also married to someone who's not in the business. So mm-hmm. I think then by definition, no one's interested.
Is he a fan? Your husband?
Of?
What, your work? Show business?
No. Not entirely.
He's a doctor, right?
He's not a doctor, no.
Your father was
a doctor.
My father's a doctor. Yeah, is a doctor.
Yeah.
What kind of doctor?
My father's retired. He was a headache specialist. And my brother's a neurologist, and he is a headache specialist, my brother.
Does he use Botox for headache? You know, the Botox therapy for migraines?
Yeah, I think my brother is using that.
I think I'm having a migraine.
Are you going to go get some?
I'm going to go to Lisa's brother.
Actually, you know, my guy is right here, this building
Botox
right here.
Guy?
Yeah, it's right here.
Seriously?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sarcastic.
Okay. Just no, because that, it goes all the way around like that.
No, migraines are horrible. I used to get tension headaches, and they're a bitch, too.
No, but I mean the Botox, the treatment.
They shoot it all the way
around.
It's not, I think, well, you know what? I don't know.
It's not just strategically placed around
really
your eyes or your brow
line. No, it's not just like where your, it's not just where your, like, worry lines are.
Yeah, yeah.
That ship sailed a long time ago, honey.
Yeah, because I'd read that you would consider, before acting, that you would consider getting into, you know, healthcare and helping people with their neurological storylines.
Well, no, I was going to college to be pre-med. And then I decided I don't think I really want to practice medicine, but I am really interested in an area of evolutionary biology. So the plan was to continue graduate school and That summer after I graduated, I just thought, oh, no. Mm-hmm. Now's the time before you take another step. Now's the time that you pursue acting, because don't have regrets later.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
How did you have your parents
have
that
thought even? Great. My parents were, oh, maybe it'll lighten you up, for the love of God. Yeah.
Were you heavy?
Yeah, I think I was just kind of, just really serious. Took myself seriously and, yeah.
Are you still that way?
I don't know. I'm not paying attention.
Does your husband ever say, Jesus, would you lighten up?
No, he doesn't.
No.
And your friends ever say that? See how I said friends in there?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have been told that. I mean, I can get...
Intense?
I think... Not intent. Well, oh God, everything means so much to me that I feel like I have to explain absolutely everything. You know,
I love
so now I'm beyond description because of it. But
I love that.
What is it? I don't know. I'm kind of analytical. I overthink. Uh-huh. I run scenarios.
What sign are you?
And Leo. Mm. Is that those are people who run scenarios?
Well, that's the spotlight in you.
But I have a son. I'm a Jewish mother, so you know. Yeah, I run scenarios and I overthink and I'm, you know, watch out for, oh, my God, and why are we letting him, you know, I'm that.
Do you like your kid? Because you're
I do.
You don't have to like him just because he came out of your body.
Yeah, I can't. I'm so happy you're asking me that. I'm crazy about it. I love him so much. I can't, and we can't take credit for him.
Uh-huh.
He just came out that way.
Who would play him?
Look at, I'm seriously, oh, no one could play him.
Uh-huh.
He's,
that's a mother.
He'd have to play himself.
That's a mother.
But for, in terms of just a general body rhythm.
Oh, you're trying to get an idea
about
who he is. If
we're casting the story of his life, who would play him?
Oh, my God. I mean, at times it's like a young Leonardo DiCaprio, just kind of.
Isn't it weird
like,
that we have
thoughtful?
To say a young Leonardo DiCaprio now? Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because I'm thinking of him as the kid.
I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My God, I don't know. And then he's just so, he's so mature and wise. And then he's still a teenager who doesn't get some stuff, you know, which is appropriate and fantastic. And then he completely understands other things like, well, I'm not going to take it personally.
That's amazing.
Know,
that's
because amazing. I think that's them and their problem. Like, oh my God.
Beautiful.
That sounds like the
earlier.
You're ahead. Sounds like the you earlier when you went to that junior high school.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he... Well, it's still... And it was still really hard. I mean, that was sort of a traumatic period for me. And I did have that. Yeah. But he just doesn't seem as traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's your parenting that helps as well with that. Even though you were saying you can't take credit.
I can't.
But
it's
there
him.
But there is, of course, innately.
Yeah.
But there is part... of you and your husband that did your job.
Maybe, yeah, because if we introduce the notion that this isn't your stuff, it's someone else's, then he can get it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't, you know.
Right.
When we come back, we're going to take a little break. We need to talk. We cannot.
We've got
to
talk about it.
We have to talk about friends.
You've
got to
talk about it.
Oh, yeah, well, sure.
Let's talk about Phoebe and her triplets.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Michelle.
Hey, baby.
How'd you sleep last night?
Well, I slept like a heavenly angel.
Because you
like
are.
Like I am.
You are a heavenly angel.
Yes.
And I'm sure your Casper mattress helped a little bit in that.
Well, it helped because I needed a place to rest my wings and my halo. And Casper's the perfect place to do that.
It certainly is. Now, you guys know that Casper is an amazing online retailer of premium mattresses at a fraction of the price. Now,
and
who doesn't love a price slash?
That's the whole thing. You're talking about a fraction of the price. You're not kidding, because the mattress industry has forced us consumers into paying notoriously high markups. We talked about this. I've seen mattresses for $5,000, $6,000,
$7,000. Me
too. No joke. I have one that's super expensive before I got my Casper. They're not a fan of that business model. Neither am I. We hate it. Casper's revolutionizing the mattress game by cutting the cost of dealing with the resellers in the showrooms. And what do? They pass the savings on
to you.
Hilaire.
That's right. Casper mattresses are so great. They're so great. They've got this new hybrid mattress that combines premium latex foam with memory foam.
Yep.
So they're extra, extra comfortable. It's like the plastic surgery of most of our queens.
I
light deck.
Yes. These mattresses are also American made.
I love it.
I love it. They're so confident in the quality of their mattresses that they have a risk-free trial and return policy. You can try sleeping on a Casper for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns.
I mean, Rip Van Winkle could have returned it if he didn't like
it. You're absolutely right. It's 100% risk-free, so what are you waiting for?
Just go get $50 toward any mattress purchase right now by visiting casper.com/ru. Use that offer code RU. Terms and conditions may apply. That's casper.com/RU. Get started today at Shaw for the best sleep ever.
We're back with Lisa Kudrow. Now, of course, I'm going to let Michelle take it from here because she wants, you got to talk about Friends.
Well, we got to talk. How can we not? Yeah. I mean, I think for me, and I could be wrong, but I knew that you were in The Groundlings, but you first came on our radar as Ursula on Mad About You with Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt. And was that your first job on TV?
No.
Which was?
I had some guest starring roles. Okay. I think my first guest starring role was on Cheers, which is nice. That's good.
Really? That's a great place.
That's good, yeah. Right.
Wow.
No, but Mad About You, I was just about to get a day job.
Really?
I was on a pilot. I was on the Frasier pilot, and I got fired because they came to their senses and hired Perry Gilpin.
Was that Marta Kaufman, too, show?
No. And so had already done a guest star on Mad About You, and then I got a call in the morning last minute. My agent's like, can you be there in an hour? They want you to be there in an hour. I don't think you should do it.
Your agent said that.
Mm-hmm, because it's like two lines. The character doesn't have a name. It just says waitress.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think you need to do that. And I said, well, I think I do need to do that because you don't need to know. Yeah. And I hung up, running out of money and blah, blah. And I drove down there. I didn't even see it. I didn't even know what it was. I just told myself, whatever, just really listen and then flip the funny switch. Just really listen and be funny. Just listen, be funny. Listen and respond. Be funny. That's all. Like, I just kept repeating it to myself. And I got there and I saw it and I thought it was hilarious.
The two lines. Do you remember what they were?
No.
Okay. Go on.
No. But it was that waitress who, you just throw like a dumb twist on it out of, the pause of not understanding something really simple.
Right.
And you turn it into something. It's like a rewrite without changing a word, sort of. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
And so by the end of that week, Danny Jacobson, who was running the show and created the show, he said, you're really funny. You're just really funny. And would it be okay with you if we had you come back for 5 more?
Oh, no.
Wow.
It's not okay with me. No, sorry.
Right.
I quit.
No, it was like, the theatrical part of him probably.
Amazing.
So would it be okay with you? And I said, yes, that would be okay. Yeah. I don't have to get a day job. Yay.
When people say in the production, they say, oh, you're really funny. When do you choose to believe them? When do you choose to say, because a lot of times, are they just saying that to me?
But you knew you were funny.
Well, here's what I came to learn about funny anyway, which is, he thinks I'm funny. That's almost the only guy I need to think I'm funny
Correct.
Now. Mm-hmm. And other people won't think I'm funny. So what are you going to do about that?
Can't please everyone.
Right. So he thinks I'm funny. Good enough for me. Yeah. Paul Reiser thinks I'm funny. That's an endorsement. I think he's fantastic.
A comic.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's all you need. I mean, I already had sort of like, by that point, set up rules, like this. Conan thinks you're funny, just don't even worry about it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the Friends process, coming from Ursula, because Phoebe was her sister,
twin
sister, but first
sister,
there was
okay.
Ursula,
right?
So I do my 5 or 6 episodes, and then it's pilot season, I'm auditioning, and I was going to test for a Fox show, but then there was this NBC show called These Friends of Mine or
Friends Like Us.
Friends
whatever.
Like Us. Yeah. Friends Like Us.
I know that because Leah Remini is one of my best friends, and
she was on
got
These
down
Friends
to
of Mine.
The end.
Oh.
For the Monica role.
Oh.
And the story goes it was down to her and one other girl after a week of screen testing and auditioning every single day. They left at like 8 o'clock at night, and as they were leaving, Courtney Cox is walking in, and they went, we didn't get this. We didn't get this.
Yeah.
She told that story on the podcast. Mm. They saw it as Courtney was walking in. They go, hers.
They're going with the girl from.
Yeah. So they knew. So I know a little bit about the audition process. But did you have to go through that nightmare, too? Or were they just like, Phoebe's going to be Ursula's?
No.
Okay.
No. It was, I had to audition a lot. And I got to audition for producers first because David Crane, who co-created it with Marta Kaufman, his boyfriend was Jeffrey Clarick, who was a writer on Mad About You. Oh. So David knew who I was, and Jeffrey thought I was funny and good, and so you should have her go in and read for that Phoebe role. So they did. They brought me in, and it went well. I had to go back and read for Jim Burrows, which was scary.
Right.
You know, because I thought, uh-oh. Because I had been fired from Frasier, and he was the director, and I thought, oh, well, he probably thinks I'm garbage. And maybe he's checking because they like me and they need his okay before it goes anywhere else. I don't know. Past that, and then the studio and the network. And I don't remember all of them because I was in a very, very good zone for auditioning and mindset about auditioning and all of that.
That's
and not
great.
Taking it personally. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because as I was going on the auditions, going to the studio, Warner Brothers and the network, and I'd see other actresses there who were known. Like, I knew them, and I knew their names, and they've been done a lot, and much closer to Phoebe than I was as in terms of who they were and what their persona was. And I saw them just getting like, oh, God, how many people were in there, you know?
Yeah.
Someone was like, I don't know, there were like 50. It's like, 50. How do they expect us to do a good job when there's so many people? And I thought, but when you shoot it in front of a live audience, that's like 200 people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, so
well,
how can this be a problem? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And or one of them even went, oh, you.
To you?
Yeah, you're that girl. I'm mad about you. That's funny. Uh-huh. I was like, oh. Oh, my God, I'm known. You know, so excited.
I love that.
And so I almost felt like I was the only one who could cope.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then I think I did have a good take on the character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, just that it's all okay. Yeah, my mom killed herself. As you know how that goes, don't we all? You know, it was like that attitude, like as we all know.
Yeah. But that sort of backstory that you add to each character, that's what's so fascinating to me, because not only do you have it in your head, but you're able to make it come to life to where we, the audience, understands exactly what you're talking about. That's where the magic happens. And I'm still trying to figure out did you have any idea how that happens?
Well, yes, because I make a composite of people that I know, so I know it's going to be true.
Right.
Because I know someone who things did happen to her, but she took it all like way too in stride, you know? Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, well, yes, I'm not allowed to return to school because my father thinks it's making me irreligious. So, well, you know how that goes. So, of course, I have to work in a nursing home. And then there's Flora. Flora's funny. You know, it's just like, oh, Flora's so funny. You walk into Flora's room, Flora, how are you today? And Flora's like, well, it looks like my drawer's been mixed by a big spoon. And she's laughing. And I was like, look at you just enjoying everything in the midst of, oh, no, you're like 19 years old and you're working at a nursing home and you can't go back to school where you want to go. And here you are visiting, watching your friends having their life, and you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the way it goes. Not chipper, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's so much
I admire
going on
that.
There at
but
one time.
With that person?
Mm-hmm.
In your head.
Kind of. It's just, but the shorthand is, well, that's okay, and we all know. That's what's the funny part is, mm-hmm. like, well, we all know.
Yeah.
Like, no one knows.
Right.
That. Yeah. You know, it's just those things that people, the wrong assumptions that are funny.
Yeah.
I don't
and
know.
Fired wow. from Mad About You for what? Why?
No, fired from
Frasier.
From Frasier.
Yeah. It wasn't working. It wasn't a good mix. What I was doing with that character was not right. It wasn't
totally different
a good
than what
mix.
Perry Gilpin did.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had wanted Perry anyway, I think.
Oh. Right.
Yeah. They just made a mistake that was fixed.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Friends storyline, how many seasons did that run?
Ten
seasons.
Yeah. So then, and Mad About You was on.
And she had two kids at the same time.
My whole goal was, I'll do this Friends pilot, which is, it seems good, but you never know if a pilot's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But my goal is to become a regular on Mad About You.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Which had been on and was Heritage.
It was great. I thought it was the best show on TV.
It was a great show.
So that was my goal. And then the pilot got picked up, and I remember Paul Reiser, oh, he's so funny. He was like, so I saw the pilot. It's six people sitting on a couch. And I said, yeah. And he said, all right. Great. And all I could think was, yeah, but you guys won't make me a regular. So
right.
I'm doing
how many,
this other
how long
show.
Did it take for the show to blast into the stratosphere?
That summer.
Just that, what, the first season?
The first season, we were holding on to Mad About You's numbers fine. Mm-hmm. And I know this because we would, Matthew Perry would ask every single day, Jim Burrows, all right, how'd we do? How'd we do? What's going on? So, and then that summer, we were put on in repeats after Seinfeld.
Oh.
So instead of 8:30, we were on at 9:30 in the uh-huh. summer, and that's when we exploded.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And never, I mean, what was it like being on a show that basically changed the face of television, in a sense?
I don't know. It was something to be try to ignore it because right. you didn't. You were. I was afraid that, like, I don't, you know, take this in too much.
Right.
But I have to say, after 9/11, you know, and everything shut down, I was driving. And there was nothing but on the news, you know, yeah. who everyone knew in New York and who wasn't, who didn't make it and all that. And I was driving in the street, and I was used to people, you know, in the street stopping at a stoplight and just like, ah, it's her. Mm-hmm. And this one time, I was stopped and someone looked over and just went, thank you.
Oh.
And I almost started crying and thought, okay, that's a value. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that... It's worth it. I get it now. I mean, I get why entertainment is really important to yeah. people. It's not something we always just make fun of, like, well, it's not brain surgery. You're not actually helping anybody. It's like, well, but you...
No, you...
You are yeah. helping. We're part of an escape.
Yeah.
And that's a healthy thing to do.
It's like that Preston Sturges film, Sullivan's Travels. It's about this director who goes into 30s era depression to find out what the real America is, only to find out that, you know, Steamboat Willie is really what is helping people.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I got to, that's what I learned.
Yeah. yeah. And then, so when Dan was on our show, I asked him about the movies that you made with him, and that was... what was it called?
With Dan and Don Roos?
Yeah, it was Opposite of Sex, and the other one was...
Happy Endings.
Happy Endings, mm-hmm. which is... That it really is. And that's another tour de force
it's a good
for
movie.
You. It's
oh, you
really
think?
Good. I think so. Obviously, it's an ensemble cast,
yeah,
but...
Yeah. Laura Dern blows me away.
She's
in that
amazing.
Movie. She blows me away every time.
Underrated.
Is she? No, I don't think so. I mean,
she's underrated because people, she's not right off the tip of the tongue. People don't automatically know her or automatically think of her. And every single thing she's done has
Did you
been
see Enlightened?
Amazing.
Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
every,
yeah,
even
yeah.
think back
yeah.
to Mask. Like, think
oh, yeah.
everything
yeah,
that she's
always,
done.
She's an
actor. Oh, she's amazing.
Yeah. She's the real thing. She's.
Yeah.
Flawless.
Yeah, agree. Yeah.
And when you work with the real thing like that, does it make it easier? I know you did movies with Nora Ephron and did you have scenes with Walter Matthau?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
And what's it, does it make you better actually to be with those kinds of superstars? Does it make your performance better?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I think... It's interesting to watch other people's process and then you finally realize, oh, I can have a process. I'm entitled to have a process too.
Uh-huh. but that's the part that
you know, I don't
a
have to
of
do
actors
it that,
up.
Their way.
But it's true. But a lot of people don't. I think going back to what you were saying, when you're saying, but how? Some of us don't have a process or.
Well, you don't know. I don't know. I didn't know I had a process until I saw other
right.
people's process and went, oh, that's not how I do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I know that I need things to be very relaxed and mm-hmm. happy.
Mm-hmm. Has your process ever clashed with someone else's process?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes with director's process, mm-hmm. you know, that can certainly happen. And then I feel like, well, I better make the adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, I don't know, it depends.
Yeah, yeah. What do you want to do? I mean, you've done it all. You get to produce your own projects and... you know, I'm a fan of Scandal. I saw you on Scandal.
Oh, right.
You get to do all these different...
I thought I should see what a 1 hour is like.
Why not?
I should see what that's like.
How was it?
Hard. Yeah.
Was
yeah.
it?
It's a lot of work.
A lot of work because of the hours involved? Or
yeah, and it's not character driven. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's story-driven.
Story-driven. Yeah. It's script-driven. So it's, you know, it's like, yeah. I mean, I think I would have a hard time, as much as I admire...
Shonda Rhimes?
Well, yeah, Shonda Rhimes, for sure. But I was thinking of, oh, God. Never mind. He wrote A Few Good Men and West Wing and
Aaron Sorkin.
Of course. Yeah. And I know him, so It's insane that I blanked on his name.
Yeah.
But I think I would have a hard
time.
We're
all women of a certain age.
That's true. I think I would have a hard time because I know it needs to be letter perfect. Mm-hmm. And I've got a block against letter perfect. Well, that means it's not mine.
Right.
Right, right.
So, and that's what disappoints me about myself, that I'm not as professional enough or proficient enough to be able to overcome that
thing. And so when you're in a situation like a Shonda Rhimes or a West Wing storyline where you have to be letter perfect, do you feel that you're not at your best? Do you feel that you're not doing the job?
Yes, because sometimes I feel like I'm reciting lines to get the lines right because I know that's of top priority. Mm-hmm. And that to me is another horrible weakness. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm there to do.
Yeah,
I'm there to act.
A common thing,
so
too.
When I remember that I'm a certain age and I'm allowed by this point, I hope, to be able to say, I'm going to do it, it's going to come out wrong, then I'll get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably how it's going to go, if that's okay with you.
What's the best way for someone to compliment you? When you think about your career, this long, successful career, what's the best compliment you've ever been given by someone?
Well, there were a lot of them today.
In this room here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is. I mean, I think, you know, the appreciation for the comeback is a huge... That means so much to me
because
I co-wrote that and co-produced it, and that's huge.
Do you know how big it is? Like, do you really know the impact that show had on, especially our community? But
yeah,
it's something I quote continuously almost every day of my life. Like, even if I walk into my kitchen and go, I don't need to see that. Like, stupid shit, Lisa. Every day, even like if we're on set, I'll go, give her another take.
Stupid, I did it the other day at my other job. Yeah. I said, give her another.
Like, we do this stuff and we're constantly quoting it.
A hook is a hook.
But yeah. Every other line was on top of.
Right,
it's
right.
Never ending, which was so brilliant about it.
Well, because I worked with Michael Patrick King, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's.
Yeah.
He's otherworldly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so are you.
And that you have to watch him direct.
I would be honored.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did see him do it.
I did.
And the thing is, you're doing a lot of takes. He's doing a lot of takes because visually, he's looking for, and that's why it's so hard with this show, because the camera's moving. You don't know that someone's going to cross when they're exactly supposed to. Uh-huh. That, you know, everyone's just being there in the scene, which you're supposed to. But he knows how it needs to look for the timing. And he's right. When you watch it, you know, like we did another scene somewhere and he said, it feels too clean.
Mm-hmm.
And then he instructed someone to just walk through my conversation with someone carrying something, you know, just to like mess it up. And it's fantastic. It makes all the difference. It makes it feel more like
that's what he does, what he does,
happening.
And you do what you do. And he's brilliant.
He's amazing.
Well, he gave me one note while we were doing our scene that I've actually remembered since then. And it actually worked for me in other things. He wanted me to just be more realer. You
and
know?
How were you able to do that?
You know, I'm playing myself in the scene.
Yeah.
So
but that's the irony.
Well, but the thing, this is the thing, is that Valerie Cherish comes over to the table to talk to Andy Cohen.
Right.
And she basically interrupts our lunch.
Yeah. Multiple times, honey. Yeah.
But he really wanted me to sort of react and actually even make it smaller. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, I get it. It was the realism, even the small way that my eyes looked down after seeing her and my inner dialogue being, well, okay. You know, it's just small, small things.
Right, exactly. Okay, maybe that's why you were asking me, what do I do? That's what I do.
Right.
You've got an inner dialogue. Your brain is never quiet. the whole time. You've always got some thought or opinion about what is happening, and sometimes it comes out and sometimes you're able to mask it, but we can usually tell when it's being masked, too.
Yes, yes, we can.
And the camera gets close.
It's close. Mm-hmm. It's right in there. So even the anything you're feeling is actually going to show up. And if you're faking it, you'll see it, too.
Masterclass.
Right. Yeah,
well. But that's what's great about this show, and that's why on this show it is kind of easy to be good. Because you've got to just be there. You don't know when the camera's on you and when it's not. You don't know how close it is. You've got to just be there.
That you don't take the credit for how brilliant you are. I think that speaks volumes about what a generous actor you are and what a probably generous friend and incredible mother you are, because you show is brilliant from every aspect. I'm going to give you that.
Yeah, I think it's well done.
But Valerie Cherish is so special. And it's that creation. Well, you created her.
I saw Pauly D on another show, and I can't remember.
Pauly G.
Pauly G. On another show.
Lance Barber.
The actor. Yeah. He's so good.
He wasn't playing. Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I couldn't believe it was him because he wasn't.
He also played, I think, like on a kid's show, like on Nickelodeon or Disney. I feel like I saw him doing something else, and I was like, no! I want him to be a dick.
Well, it was strange to see him because in my mind, he's a real person.
That's what I mean.
I've actually auditioned for that person before and felt so horrible about myself. You know, I'm sure you've auditioned for that person before and seen that person in everything.
I don't know.
Really?
No, he was not... I wasn't informing the Pauly G character. That wasn't really informed by any of my experiences.
Really?
Really. But, you know, the writers, every one of them had
said
a different person.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was Pauly G. That's how many of them there were.
Have you had experiences like that? Well, I'm sure early on there were people. No?
I'm trying to. Well, I mean, yes, but I don't. I can't remember.
I'm telling you, in my career, so much humiliation. I'm saying that from a place of love and of triumph.
Yeah.
But if people only knew the degradation, humiliation of this business.
I want to talk about it. We need to take one more break.
Okay, one more break.
Because I think this is really important that we
hear
that.
That's why we keep going back to the comeback, because it rings so true.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. All right, so let's take a break.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Squarespace.
Yay!
We get some really great emails from people who love their Squarespace websites. Yes. All you got to do is write to us at rupaulpodcast@gmail.com. If you've created a website with your Squarespace, honey, I want to hear all about it. Because it's a fabulous technique to creating something beautiful.
It's so easy too, you guys. And you know, Rue and I have talked about this since the beginning. Thank you, Squarespace.
Yes.
But the reason is, and we'll stand behind everything we talk about in here, is because we believe in it.
Yeah.
So not only is it affordable, but it's easy and anybody can do it.
Anybody can do it. You get a free trial, actually, with no credit card required by just going to squarespace.com. And honey, when you get to see what that is, I'm sure you're going to get on there, you're going to create a website, and you're going to write us a letter saying how much you love your Squarespace website.
And I got a letter.
Let's hear it.
All right. Dear Rue and Michelle, it's your lovely, hardworking, and ever so humble girl that gets shit done, Joelle. Hi!
Ah.
Hi, Joella. She says, I watch and listen to everything you do. Ha ha. After hearing you two constantly talk about Squarespace on What's the Tea, I was inspired to create a site called EntitledOblivion.com.
Oh.
It's simply a place for people to vent and get stuff off their chest. Oh, I love it already. Vents about people in our lives who are entitled, arrogant, and are completely oblivious to how their actions impact people around them. This is so good. Perhaps someone who's done us wrong, like Detox's plastic surgeon, for example.
Oh.
With Squarespace, I built EntitledOblivion.com in a matter of hours. I created a mechanism where people can post anonymously and vent away with unlimited space to air out. It's been a really, really cool journey to watch the site grow and see other vents from around the world. And all of this is thanks to Squarespace and you, Rue and Michelle, for turning me on to Squarespace. Thank you. I love you both. Joelle, Rue, don't forget you have a dentist appointment at 2 p.m. today. I love it. Entitled Oblivion.com.
No, it's perfect. And, you know, if you know Joelle, you know, sort of the technical things, you know, if she can do it, anybody can do it. It's fantastic. Listen, kids, go get your free trial with no credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com. And when you are blown away and ready to confirm a plan, use the offer code RUE and get 10% off. That's
Are you?
You'll be getting a great deal and you'll be helping to keep What's the Tea free.
Holla.
Hey, thanks again to Squarespace and keep sending us your websites at RuPaulPodcast@gmail.com. That's squarespace.com, offer code RU. Okay. We were talking degradation. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, degradation.
Yeah,
correct.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but it's no joke. I mean, look, it's not a cliche that people say, oh, you're going to be in this business. You better be tough.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, you know, I don't know about you, but my dad was always like, I don't know how you don't like being criticized. You're the most sensitive person. And I thought, oh, you don't know me.
Mm.
I mean, maybe as a kid I was.
Yeah.
Maybe with you I was. But I'm not. These people aren't my father.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're not my father. And so I don't.
You're a married woman. I'm a married woman. And correct me if I'm wrong. I can take critique, criticism, everything from everybody. But once my husband goes to do it, it's different. It has a different connotation.
Yes, it's like, I thought you left me.
Yeah. Exactly. It's different. So I think with your parents, it's obviously different than it is in this. When we go out in this business, we're ready for it. Yeah. When my husband tries to tell me, I'm like, shut up. No, ew.
Yeah.
Stop.
No, but one doesn't have to be rude. That's when I die, when I see people being rude.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
To actors or someone, telling them in a way that's just. And I also, by the way, my feelings don't get hurt if a director came over and said, so let's do it again. Better.
Just trying to be funny.
Better.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it could be funnier. Just do it better. And I would know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that wouldn't bother. That doesn't bother me.
No.
No, not at all.
That's direction.
It's that other thing where people are actually quite nasty, especially when you are not on this week's hot list, you know.
Yeah.
If you've ever been. And that's why that character rings so true. It's
Well, I don't ever need to hear it. And I think, I don't know whether my agents know it now, but I know I have said the bad stuff, I don't mind the truth, but the stuff that doesn't serve me, that's just mean, I don't protect me from that. I don't need to know that. I'm fine not knowing truth.
Right.
When it comes to certain things that aren't going to serve me.
Right.
You know,
I need to see that.
Oh my
God. I don't need to know that.
Is there a role or a character that you love to play that you feel like you were born to play, like in some autobiographical some character? I'm trying to think of what that would be for you. What I would see you doing.
I know. I don't think of those things.
Maybe the Sandy Dennis story. Maybe her relationship with Jerry Mulligan, the 10-year relationship with Jerry Mulligan.
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, she was the jazz musician. She was with him for 10 years. They were never married, but there's that.
The remake of Annie Hall. Lisa Kudrow is all over that.
Yes.
Oh, I'm too old. Old. All I could say was old.
Oh, you know, what about MAME? What about the swinging, you know, lady in her late 40s who gets this kid?
Yeah, that's a fascinating.
You know, do you sing and dance?
No.
No?
No, so I'd be out.
You could do it Natalie Wood style and have somebody else do your voice.
No, but if there's a version of that story, that would probably not be interesting if it weren't theatrical or musical.
Yeah.
Like the Rosalind Russell one. But that was very theatrical.
Yeah.
Anything Rosalind Russell.
I don't know I don't know. I wasn't a big hit at the Groundlings because I think I'm not theatrical enough.
Other than Conan, who else was in your group?
At the Groundlings? Well, Julia Sweeney was there. She got on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. It's Pat.
Kathy Griffin.
Mm-hmm. Same time you were there.
Same group?
She had been there before I was there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who was just always hilarious. Like, you know, like if there was time to kill, send Kathy out. And she would just go out and talk to the audience or do a song improv, just make up something. And she's just so comfortable and she'd make fun of people, but they'd be laughing, you know, because there's no, I don't know, no malice.
In this business that we start out, and there's so many people who we start out with, and then, you know, you're really blessed and lucky enough to become a big superstar hit. Huh. And then there are people who didn't have that happen to them. And how do you reconcile that relationship with those people if you still have those relationships?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could just walk around apologizing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, you know, some people win the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think Friends was. It was winning the lottery.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think the best I can do is just be really appreciative of it and make sure that I'm making the most of that. That afforded me certain opportunities to do things like The Comeback, mm-hmm. and like web therapy.
Yes.
Oh, my God, we didn't even talk about
I know.
Web therapy. Uh-huh. Oh, my
you know.
God, talk about web therapy. This is another brilliant one. Lisa, oh, my God. How could we have not talked?
Well, I thought maybe you didn't like it.
No, I love it. Are you kidding me? It's so brilliant.
But you're not required to like it.
So brilliant.
It's brilliant.
You're
it's
not
brilliant.
Required to yeah. like
no,
it at
it's
all.
It's so good. I forgot about that. How dare I?
But yeah, I'm sure, but you know, the people, you know, sometimes people you're around, they don't know they're giving you shade about your success.
Oh,
but you can feel it.
Yeah, but I forget it. I toss it out.
Really?
Yeah, I won't have it. I don't hang on to it. I can't.
She's the master of many things.
It doesn't serve me. I compartmentalize. I'm good at denial.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a lot of things that a therapist would say is really pathological.
Uh-huh.
But
which helps
me,
with your therapy character.
It's a fine line to me between good coping skills and
insanity.
Denial. And dissociative.
Well, no, that is a healthy denial. Because
disorder.
The truth is, of course, their shade towards you has nothing to do with you at all. So that is a healthy denial of something that doesn't serve you.
And they're entitled to think I'm not that great and that, you know, why her? She wasn't that great. I was better. Yeah, you were. I'm sorry.
Mm. Right.
You know, right place, right time. I got good at auditioning.
But don't you think every performer has thought that at least 20 times in their life? I know I have.
Why her?
Or why not me? Or I could have
done it. I did used to. I used to. By the time I got to being good at auditioning, mm-hmm. that was never in my head.
What do you think made you good at auditioning?
A class by Ian Tucker, who's a teacher, and it was all cold reading, and he used sides from people's auditions for real shows, and it was just great. He made you realize this is a business.
Mm-hmm.
You're not there to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
Be pleasant, but so many things he said that made so much sense, which was you're all dying to act and complaining you never get to act. Well, you got this audition. It's 2 minutes of uninterrupted acting. Take it.
Mm-hmm.
Why should you know what the producers are doing while you're auditioning? You're meant to be a character in a scene.
Mm.
There are no producers eating lunch. And why take it personally that they're eating lunch? Maybe they've been having casting sessions all day long and they're starving.
Mm-hmm.
So just don't take anything personally. You know, mm-hmm. everyone wants you to be good. The truth is they'd love for you to be great and they're done.
Yes.
Hello.
That's
yes.
the
exactly.
truth. No one's out to get you. No one's trying to sabotage you, you know, except maybe certain actors when you're a guest star on a show, you know, and they're just, and even it's not about you. They are tired of being there. They've done it for 7 years and they are done.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're cranky. That is not about you. You're there to do one thing. Act.
Yeah.
You're an actor. Act. It was.
That is brilliant.
Yes.
And not just for acting, for
everything
in life.
Yeah. Just stay in your lane. Just stay on your path.
It's true. And if people can remember that going into, Leah had said a long time ago, their job is to fill this one role.
Mm-hmm.
They want nothing more than for you to walk in and fill that job.
Yeah.
And so they can stop there. That's exactly what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most brilliant piece of advice you can give an actor. Because if they go in there with the intent of just filling that role and nothing else, just done. Your job is done.
And I got to say, casting now, younger actors, they're so confident and wonderful. And they just seem to get that they're there to do one thing.
That's
and that's what
hear.
They're doing. They don't seem distracted by, how am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's unbelievable. I don't know how they're so myself realized in that way.
Yeah. So is there any talk anymore about this Friends movie and reunion scenario?
Or no.
I heard Mardikoff last week said, this will never happen.
Well, they keep talking about it in the press. It just never dies.
Right, because first you would need Marta and David to write it, because who else would write it? Mm. And they're busy.
Yeah.
Right.
And then what a headache to figure out, what are these people doing in their mid-late 40s, 50s? Yeah.
What have they been up to?
Yeah. Yeah. That we'll care about, because we cared a lot about these 20, early 30-somethings.
Right. Because honestly, that show is about a certain movement. Yeah, it's a certain
it's a love story.
Feeling of that period of time. Mm-hmm. And how do you translate that into today? It doesn't really.
No, you could get other actors.
Right.
Do
well, you could
like a Brady Bunch thing. It wasn't campy. I mean, it's people still like it. So it's not like Brady Bunch where you could, go back and just sort of snicker at some things that were, my God, that is so. Back then.
Right.
But there are some of the fashions are already, when you watch it back, it's like, oh, look at those high cut jeans. And those, you know what I mean? It's like, wow,
look at that cell phone.
That was, it's true. Uh-huh.
Look, they're checking the machine.
It's so
the machine
or the,
had a glitch.
The peasant dressed on top of a t-shirt.
Yes!
Yeah.
Oh, Courtney Cox.
Yeah.
She had a lot. She had most of the fashion faux pas.
Yeah.
Most of them were Courtney.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious to see them too, because she's
faux
this
pas.
Big. No. Meaning. Well, I guess it wasn't a faux pas. Fashion statements of the
90s. Right. Yeah.
Now looking back, but now in stores in Forever 21, you see the T-shirt with the dress
I'm
over it.
I'm seeing
again.
It now. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Listen, thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
Thank you
for
such an interesting conversation.
Well, we just go all over the place. This is what we talk about. Even if there weren't microphones or anything, we'd just still be. This is what we just do.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Was it irresponsible to
do
it and now it's going to be broadcast?
No.
Not at all.
No,
I think
not
it shows
at all.
A different side of you that people love, and I think that's the importance. The importance of being earnest.
Well, yeah, that and just trying to peek inside of that all that texture. Has anybody ever?
You've got it too.
Well, but it's hard. It's not as easy to do on camera.
I agree.
Camera like that.
You've mastered it.
When you've got a character to hide behind.
Right.
It's easier. I mean, I'm floundering when it's like someone that sounds a lot like me and is a lot like me and I can't watch it.
Right.
Huh.
After you do a take, do you go back and look at the playback?
No. With the comeback? No. Uh-huh. No, I don't.
Even on movies, you won't?
I mean, sometimes for other reasons or if I'm not understanding a note, then maybe I should see what you're talking about.
Right. Because when I'm in drag on the judges panel, I'm Mommy Dearest, I'm Joan Crawford, I'm Faye Dunaway, I'm doing Dia Han Carroll, I'm doing a bunch of different things, and they're always right there, and I know exactly how to respond that way. But then a therapist years ago told me, she said, Rue, when you're out of drag, you have that same power if you want to. You have that same command if you'd like it.
And, yeah, you do.
And I didn't realize that.
But the same way she's talking about being behind a character, in drag, you're behind the character.
I'm behind the character, but I can use that same power outside of it.
Yeah, but you have it. There is something about you that's very powerful, kind of this no-nonsense. You know who you are, and you'll be polite, but you won't have it.
That's
how you feel.
That is
very
for sure,
true.
Darling.
No, but I mean, I admire that in people more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So since you give me a guy, would you please come and be on Drag Race, please?
I don't want to judge people.
No, it's not that. You know what? Let me explain it to you.
Okay.
This is the thing. It's a love fest. Nobody loses. Nobody loses the show.
Oh.
What we do is we comment on what they did in a certain challenge, but it's not like judging. Michelle does all the heavy mean.
No, you talk about the things you didn't like.
Listen, there always has to be the Paul Abdul and there has to be the Simon Cowell. Rue's Mama Rue.
Right.
And I'm very no nonsense. It's just the way that it is. And I want these kids to succeed.
We want them to succeed.
Yes, we all do. But Rue's untouchable. She's the mother of all. So I'm the one who's the – I'm a Jewish mother too. It's tough love. I grew up with a mother from Brooklyn who called it like it is. Oh. It is what it is.
Yeah. My mom was from the Midwest, so I
– So you got to hand it a little sweeter basket of bread.
I
mine was
a lot
covered
of
with gravel.
Sayings and
you know?
Cliches.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
So I'm the tough one. You'd be there to just – praise them in your way. You don't have to do the.
There's also an other thing. You don't have to sit on the judges panel. You can also come and direct them in a scene.
Yeah.
You can also come. They do theatrical musicals. They do all kinds of stuff. You don't have to sit on a judges panel. You can come in and direct them in a scene.
No, I shouldn't do that.
You shouldn't do that?
No.
Why not?
Because what do I know about? I mean, I'd make them all so subtle. It would defeat the whole purpose. I could just see myself like, too much. That's too much. Why are your arms? What's with the eyebrows?
Think of it as theater. Theater.
What if we did?
What if the eyebrows? They're drawn that way.
What if we did a Val Cherish?
Yes!
Val Cherish, a line of something's a product like
chocolate
a
cake.
Fragrance or something, and Val has to. They all have to play Val, and they have to do a commercial for this product. And you direct him in that. You would know how to direct him as Val Cherish.
That's funny.
Yeah,
but that's not there. That wouldn't be a judging thing.
No, it wouldn't.
But
be
I
judging.
Wouldn't mind being on the judging panel them. If I'm only saying supportive, nice things.
Yeah, no, you
yes,
can do
you
that.
Can.
There are people who come and say only supportive, nice things.
Yeah. There's some people who feel the same way you do, and they just love what these girls do. So there's no way they want to be
exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. I'll do the cut.
It's great. So great. So we start shooting August 10th, and you'll be there on August 15th.
Yes, pick a date.
Done.
You'd be so. They would live. It
done.
Would be so. You do not have to do anything negative.
Okay.
Yeah.
Except hair and makeup. But yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Well, thank you, Lisa Kudrow. You're absolutely fabulous. And thank you for doing our show.
And thank you for the years of joy that you have provided us.
Thank you.
Yes.
Can't wait for more.
More.
So good.
All right, kids. Until next time. We'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen? If you can't love yourself, how in the hell you gonna love somebody else? Can I get an amen?
And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes.
If you can't love yourself, how in the hell you gonna love somebody else? Amen.